sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. I'm Mark Crutcher, as you heard, and lurking nearby is Sarah Waits.
Hello everyone. So before we get started, I want to read a comment we've gotten from one of our listeners. And I just want to say before I read this, we love hearing from you guys. And so any feedback that you want to give to us or any suggestions or even show suggestions, we love to hear from you guys. And you can easily do it at lifedynamics.com/podcast. There's a form on the page where you can leave that. Or if you go on the episode page, you can always comment on the episodes. Let us know what you think.
Let's make sure people understand. We don't want to just get praise comments. If you have a negative comment, we want to hear that. If you have an idea that...
Be like that Mark Crutcher. He just drones
on. Yeah, he's just going on and on. You got to get rid of that old guy. But anyway, anything you have to say, and especially something that can be constructively used to make the show better, we would truly appreciate it.
So this one is from Jerry, and I'm so sorry, Jerry, because I'm going to get your last name wrong, I'm sure. Takima? And Jerry says, I listen from Canada every week. I wanted you to know because of your dedication and enthusiasm on a continued basis, I have the fire in my belly to pray, volunteer, donate, and join a pro-life organization in our area. Well done on your part. Thanks from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Well, isn't that nice?
It is nice.
People from Canada like us, even if people in America don't like us.
You know, it's funny because this is the Pro-Life America podcast, but we also have people from Canada, Mexico, the United Kingdom, Germany, all around the world listening to us. And I just want to give a quick shout out to our international listeners.
Well, you know, back when we were doing the Life Talk show, we had viewers all over the world. We had a lot of them in Ireland. I even got a request one time to go speak in Ireland. And we had a lot of Life Talk viewers in Africa. That was always real interesting. We get a lot of comments from people in Africa. And I'm assuming the podcast is doing the same thing. Anyway, that was nice that it's named Jerry.
Jerry
wrote in. Thank you, Jerry. We appreciate it. But like I said, you don't have to call in and heap praise on us. If you got something, you say, for God's sakes, Mark, get her off the show. Get somebody else on the show.
Get someone smarter on there.
Get somebody smarter.
That chick you have on there is just awful.
She's got to go. She's out. Just let me know, and that will give me the excuse I need to
get rid of me.
To walk Sarah to the curb.
Set me out there.
And you'll still be there 3 days later. But anyway, whatever comments you have, we'd really like to hear from you.
Even if you disagree with us
on
an episode, which we haven't really gotten that even, often.
And if you disagree with me about something, you have every right in the world to be wrong. So just...
I disagree with you all the time.
And you're always wrong. But that's your right. You have a right to be wrong.
And you have a right to be wrong.
Yeah, but I never am. That's the difference. Uh-huh.
Sure.
Right.
Sure, I'm a back away for when the lightning comes down from the sky here.
Right.
Get me to safety.
Anyway, we've got a real interesting subject to discuss today.
We have a really important subject to discuss today.
And the subject is the issue of men in the pro-life movement.
Well, I would expand that and say men in the role of the family.
Well, that's part of it.
That's the big thing.
But you know, the pro-aborts are out here. Mm-hmm. And I saw a big article that was carried nationwide, I guess Associated Press picked it up, just a couple of weeks ago from some pro-abort saying, hey, we've got to do a better job of getting men involved in the pro-choice movement because men have a stake in this too.
There's been several articles from the pro-choice side talking about we've framed abortion as a women's issue and told men basically
shut up,
sit down, or just be quietly supportive on the sidelines. And they're like, we've completely alienated a block of people who are benefiting from legal abortion.
Well, not only a block of people, but a block of people that polls consistently show are more pro-abortion than the women that they say this is an issue for. So they have basically told men, you have no stake in this, keep your mouth shut, sit down.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they say,
no uterus, no
opinion. Now that they're losing, and that's the issue here.
Yeah.
If they thought that they were winning, they would not be making this argument. They know for a fact the pro-life movement has the momentum.
We have the females.
We're winning, right? We have more women than they do.
And the reality is, if you look at the statistics, pro-lifers and conservatives are having more children than liberals.
In my book, Siege, I wrote about that, about a study that was done. I can't remember the university that did it, that showed that pro-life and conservatives, but pro-lifers as a subset of conservatives, we're having many more children. Mm-hmm. And what's been happening here is that while we've been having babies, they've been having abortions. Abortions don't grow up to vote.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's changing the whole landscape. And that's why you see so many young people getting involved in the pro-life movement.
Well, and the pro-choice movement has been deluding themselves that you can have several generations that have grown up under Roe versus Wade and a legalized abortion, where their lives were legally able to be snuffed out at one point, telling them that their lives didn't matter. And then they're turning around and trying to sell abortion to them.
Yeah.
And they don't see the problem with this.
Yeah. Well, that was inevitable. I wrote about that 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology that's coming along. You know, there's a pretty high percentage of people today, adults now, that have sonogram pictures of themselves when they were babies, mm-hmm. that their mothers and fathers took when they were babies. It's pretty hard to convince them, if they can see a picture of themselves as an unborn child, that they were nothing but a glob of tissue.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to convince them of that.
Yeah.
And so technology's had an impact on this. But I think that the issue we're talking about today, and it does cut across lines besides abortion. There was this article, I think it was a result of a study that was done, showing that many of the social problems that mm-hmm. beset America today
yeah.
are a direct result of fatherless homes.
Or a strong correlation.
I saw something the other day when I was watching this show on TV about this subject,
mm-hmm.
and the numbers were staggering.
Oh, yeah.
And especially among African-American kids.
Yeah, so I did some research on this just to kind of get some numbers on this. And there's several different groups out there who talk about fatherlessness, but one of them is the National Fatherhood Initiative, and they have a flyer. And the flyer says, "The Father Absence Crisis in America. Research shows when a child is raised in a father-absent home, they are affected in the following ways. They are 4 times at a greater risk of poverty. They're more likely to have behavioral problems. They're more likely to go to prison. They're more likely to commit crime. They are more likely to face abuse and neglect, more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, and 2 times more likely to drop out of school." And there's more stuff on here, but it says like 18.4 million homes or 1 in 4 without a biological step or adoptive father at home.
Yep. Over half the teenage girls in this country mm-hmm. live in a home without their biological father.
Yeah. There's all these studies, one after another, showing that fatherless homes are connected to things such as suicides, crime, homelessness. 90% of homeless youth are from fatherless homes, and that was found by the Bureau of the Census. I mean, go yeah. down the line. It's connected to all this stuff.
On this thing that I saw on television the other night, which kind of led to this to mm-hmm. this particular subject on the show, they were saying among black males in prison, mm-hmm. 93% did not live in a home with their father.
And one of the stats that I found, it said 85% of all youths in prison come from fatherless homes, which is 20 times from the average. There is also another one that was saying that 70% of youth in state-operated institutions come from fatherless homes, 9 times the average. And I'll put the links to these things so people can go look this up themselves. And I went over to Pew Research, and they found that of single parents, which do you think are the majority, mothers or fathers? Who do you think is more likely to be a single parent?
The obvious answer is mothers.
And you'd be right. So 81% are mothers. Only 19% are fathers. And the gender difference is even more pronounced among African-American single parents. So 89% of African-American women are single mothers, and just 11% are single fathers. In this article from Pew Research, they also found that African-American women were the most likely to be single parents.
And abortion does play into this.
Mm-hmm.
There's several factors in this. One is that the role of men mm-hmm. has been discounted over the last 50 years or so. You're not old enough to remember it, and the pro-aborts and the leftists in this country are not ever going to fess up to it. But as someone who was there at the time when all this nonsense started, I can tell you that the battle cry for the neo-feminist movement, not mm-hmm. the original feminist movement, but this neo-feminist movement.
Starting in the like late 60s.
Late in the 60s and
early 70s,
in the 70s.
Yeah.
Their battle cry was, women need men like a fish needs a bicycle. That was the standard
wow.
deal.
Can you
everywhere.
Imagine if there was a men's group out there that said men need women like a fish needs a bicycle?
Right, and that's what affected everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when abortion was legalized, this drift toward eliminating men from society was picking up steam at the same time, then that mindset continued. So you say, well, what gives these men the idea that they can withdraw from raising children?
It can't. Well, the pro-choice movement has been teaching it for all these years.
Right.
This generation that's coming in today, they're being taught that abortion and pregnancy is a women's issue, that men have no right, no say in it, whatever she decides, they have no input whatsoever. So it's not unreasonable for a man to think, well, if I have no input in saying it,
the baby is her decision.
It's all on her. It's all her responsibility. And I can just go away if I want to.
I've been in events where I've brought this subject up. Mm-hmm. And these were all younger men, mm-hmm. teenage boys. And I have literally had them bring that very thing up, saying to me, look, if she is the one that gets to decide whether this baby lives or dies, mm-hmm. where's my role in this?
Yeah.
Why do I have any responsibility at all? And, you know, you look at this, for example, in the situation of funding of abortion, public funding of abortion, taxpayer funding. Mm-hmm. Men right now are told, no uterus, no opinion, right? That's
yeah,
a standard thing.
Yeah. But.
But if the woman decides to let the baby live, then you have to help pay for it for the next 18 years.
Yep.
Now, where is the rationale behind that?
Exactly.
And I agree that he should have the obligation to pay for the child for the next 18 years.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody's contesting that.
Right. But you can't say that mm-hmm. and then say, oh, but by the way, if she decides to kill this baby, it's none of your business.
Yeah. The logic doesn't track there.
When the abortion industry says that this is no business of men, mm-hmm. wait a minute, you made it their business. You made it my business when you started taking money out of my paycheck to pay for abortions. You can't tell me it's none of my business.
Yeah. You can't right. say where your money is going to. And if you say anything, you're sexist.
Right.
You must be.
Yeah. You're a misogynist. Yeah. The war on women. Well, the war is on the unborn. Mm-hmm. Let's make no mistake about that. There is no war on women, but there is a big time war on the unborn. But the point is that you cannot tell somebody that they have no rights regarding an issue, but they have responsibility regarding that issue.
Yeah.
That does not make any sense whatsoever, but that's where we are. And, you know, the other thing that's interesting about this to me is they say this is not men's business, but they never say that to pro-abortion men.
Yeah.
When a Bill Clinton comes out here and is the raging pro-abortion, or Barack Obama.
Or the all-male Supreme Court that legalized it.
Right. Or now Biden. Mm-hmm. They don't tell them to sit down and shut up, that you have no right. It's mm-hmm. only men who say that women deserve better than abortion. Those are the only men that they say, sit down and shut up. It's none of your business. But we're going to take money out of your check to pay for it.
Well, I think it's hypocritical to say it's none of their business when men are some of the people who benefit from legalized abortion. In fact, I would say that they benefit
more
than women.
They are the biggest beneficiary.
Because right. they don't have to undergo any of the risks or consequences of the physical procedure of an abortion procedure. There was an article in December of last year that came out. Now, this article is pretty vanilla. We've heard it many, right. many times before. But in this article, it says, men like me have also long been the direct beneficiaries of abortion access. Well, he calls it safe abortion access, but we'll take that out because right. abortion is not safe.
Well, in their view, safe means only one person dies.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Giving women the choice not to carry unwanted pregnancies often means we too can delay parenthood until we're ready. Again, wrong, because if you create a life, you're already a parent.
Right.
But it says, too often male engagement with a pro-choice movement has been articulated solely through the lens of female empowerment. He goes on later on to say, however, in viewing women as the only beneficiaries of safe abortion access, many men conveniently sidestep defending a policy they have long taken for granted. At the least, men should be honest about the ways we also benefit.
Yep. Well, this is the reason the early feminists in this country were all opposed to the legalization of abortion, mm-hmm. because they clearly saw
Yeah.
that legalized abortion would profit sexually irresponsible and sexually predatory males.
Well, even
and that's exactly what we see today.
Yeah. Well, even the neo-feminist movement wasn't originally pro-choice.
Right.
It was hijacked by the abortion rights movement, which were led by, guess what?
Men.
Men.
Right.
Shocker.
Right.
We have information on an episode where we cover that. I'll put the link to that in the description.
The abortion lobby has figured out something very clever.
Mm-hmm.
It's evil, but these people are evil. They have figured out that their best strategy is to separate men, women, and children. So they have projected this image of unborn babies as being the enemy of their mothers.
Yeah.
If you've got an unborn baby, this baby is going to keep you from succeeding in life.
You're not going to have a career. You're
no
not going to be able to do any of these
nothing.
Things. You're going to live in poverty. Yeah.
Nobody's going to want you because you've got a baby. So they have made the unborn child the enemy of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
They have made the unborn child indifferent to the father.
Yeah.
And they've separated men and women by telling them, this is not your issue, sit down and shut up. And that separates men and women. Mm-hmm. So what they've done, in effect, is they've cut women out of the herd and said, we're going to separate you from your babies. We're going to separate you from the men in your life. We're going to separate you out because that's the way we control you. Now, if you study, for example, abusive marriages, let's say where a man is abusing his wife.
Oh, a perfect parallel.
They'll tell you that what these men do is they separate the woman out. They'll separate her from her family.
From her support system.
From whatever support system she has.
And from anything that would give her the power to leave him. So like income, where she has her own money and resources in order to leave.
And so what you see is that when you have these women that are found to have been abused for a number of years, and people are real quick to say, well, why didn't you just leave? Well, it's because he separated her from all her support. And she thought he's all she had.
And by the time she gets the idea to leave, those people in their life may be gone, or she may feel like she can't go back to those people.
Well, that is exactly what the pro-choice mob has done.
Yeah.
They have separated women from their children and from the men in their lives, from their husbands, boyfriends, whatever. Separated them out. Even separate them out from their parents. That's what parental notification fights against that do.
Yeah.
It says to a young 13-year-old girl, you can't buy a car, you can't vote, you can't drink, you can't do this, that, and the other thing, but you can have an abortion. Mm-hmm. This is a way that we can separate you from your parents.
And they'll capitalize on that fear. Like if your parents find out that you're pregnant, they may kick you out.
Or beat you.
Or beat you, or something else like that. And they capitalize on that fear. Meanwhile, they're connecting them up potentially to pro-choice organizations who will help them get something that's called a judicial bypass, which basically allows a judge to sign off on the abortion and them have an abortion without their parents'
knowledge.
And they
find a judge that rubber stamps it. There is no hearing like it's supposed to be. But again, let's go back and make sure people understand. The goal that the abortion industry set out to do was to isolate women. Mm-hmm. And they've done it.
Well, I would say that they've done it across the board, but the demographic that this has had the most impact on would be the African-American community.
Oh, absolutely.
African-American women make up about 12-13% of the population, and yet they make, what, around 40% of
the abortions? Almost 40% of the abortions, right.
Which, if you look at the percentage per population, is vastly higher.
Well, you know, I've made the point many times. You hear all these people talk about voter suppression. Mm-hmm. There has never been a bigger tool for voter suppression than legalized abortion.
Yeah.
It has suppressed the political power of the African-American community dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
Over the last 40 years.
Not just in population, but in wealth, too.
In everything.
In everything.
In political power.
When you talk about fatherlessness like we have, and we looked at the statistics of fatherlessness and the things that it results in, of course, Candace Owens has talked about this a number of times. The African-American community suffers higher rates than any other demographic for fatherlessness. And the impact that that's had on that community is profound.
I know you've probably never studied this as much, but I remember years ago, there was a study done comparing this issue when this first started creeping up in the black community, and it's been in the black community now for 10 or 15 years that people have been worried about this and studied it. If you want to see how bad this problem is, it was discovered that an African-American child was more likely to live in a home with his biological mother and father during slavery than they are today.
Wow.
They are less likely to live in a home with their biological parents today than they were back when slavery was legal. Now, that's not a justification for slavery. I don't want people jumping on me about that. I'm just saying that even in that environment, a black child had a better chance of living with his parents than he does now, or she does now. And it's an obscenity that we've allowed this to happen. But again, the American left has known that they have to separate people out.
Yeah.
And in this case, they've isolated women from their own babies. And they've isolated them from the men in their lives because they cannot control a woman who's not isolated like that. They have to isolate them in order to control them the way they want to.
Well, and if you get people separated and you get people who feel like they have less control, they're a lot more afraid. And it's easier to manipulate people when they're afraid.
Yeah, or put them in victim status. And if you'll look out here, you'll see that women are constantly told that they're victims.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. You never gain power by projecting yourself as a victim of anything.
Or accepting that victimhood status.
That victim status. But women have been told now for the last 50 years that they're victims. They're victims of their children and they're victims of their men. And, you know, your only hope is with us. And it's a little bit like what happened at the end of slavery. When you had, after the 13th Amendment passed and all these Africans that mm-hmm. were enslaved, now they're set free. Mm-hmm. But what are they going to do?
That was a problem that they had to deal with.
That was a massive problem. Mm-hmm. And they weren't trained to do anything. So mm-hmm. you had these plantation owners and people that had owned slaves before.
Yeah.
Bringing all the slaves together and say, okay, y'all are free. Y'all can leave if you want to.
But
I'm going to tell you right now, you can't make it without me. And if you want to stay on, we'll work as sharecroppers. And basically nothing changed for them.
Yeah.
And it was decades before things started really changing effectively. Mm-hmm. But there was this paternalistic viewpoint in telling these slaves, you can't make it without me.
And that's exactly what the abortion industry tells women.
That's exactly what...
You can't make it without me. That
right.
glass ceiling, you can't break it without me.
You can't get along without me. If you abandon me, then you're on your own. You're screwed.
And women just need to say, hit the road, Jack.
Right.
And don't you come back.
Well, I think and when I saw this show the other day about all these women coming forward and saying, you know, maybe we made a mistake in running off the men. Not just on the abortion issue, but on...
On anything.
And just telling them that once he donates his sperm, his use is pretty much over. You can write him off.
Wow, that's really insulting.
It really is. But that's the attitude that's been projected over the last, say, 40 or 50 years. And I don't know if you've noticed this or not. You even see this influence in things like sitcoms. Mm-hmm. If you watch sitcoms, say, from the 50s, the parents were the smart ones.
And the kid was always the one who was up to the hijinks.
Right.
Doing silly stuff.
Which is the way it is in
a normal life.
Nowadays, the children are projected as the smart ones.
And the dad is the goofball.
The dad is the goofball who can't do anything right. The wife is the smart one.
Like Home Improvement.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he's just the court jester.
Yeah.
He's just there for entertainment purposes. That's all he's there for. And this stuff has had a dramatic effect mm-hmm. on the way, not only the way society sees men, but the way men see themselves. And you and I saw that firsthand when we all went down to...
Turning Point Student Action Summit.
Turning Point TPUSA event down in Florida. Mm-hmm. We had young males coming up to our deal. I talked to several of them who were saying, I'm very pro-life and I would like to speak out on abortion, but I don't think I have the right to being a man. They have been convinced that they don't have the right to. And they were also saying that if a boy speaks out in a college classroom, mm-hmm. he will be shouted down. It's none of your business.
What other issue that affects women do we tell men that they can't have an opinion on? We never tell men that they can't have a opinion on rape or domestic abuse against women. That is something that affects women predominantly. But we don't say, hey, no uterus, no opinion.
Yeah, it's none of your business.
Absolutely.
Well, let me ask you a better question. The women's movement was supposed to be about eliminating gender bias and gender-based decision-making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we tell men that they have no right to speak out on abortion, and this is all about equality, what issues do we tell women they have no right to speak out on? Mm-hmm. Can you name one?
Manspreading. If we're going to tell men that they can't have a position on abortion because they don't have a uterus, we'll say, okay, fine, you can't have a position on manspreading because you don't have male genitalia. They wouldn't take that deal. For $1 million.
This whole thing is so nonsensical.
Yeah.
And I still say, and I know that I've gotten some blowback on this over the years, mm-hmm. but I still say that the fundamental mistakes that the neo-feminist movement made was first saying that a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle, that mentality. And the second thing is that the neo-feminist movement had nothing to do with equality. It had to do with interchangeability. They weren't arguing that men and women were equal because they already knew that people already believed that. They were saying men and women are interchangeable. And that is a flat-out lie. That is untrue.
Yeah, and I think the fatherlessness statistics prove that.
Plays into that. Mm-hmm. It demonstrates that perfectly. I grew up in a family with my father and mother mm-hmm. together. And there were things that I got from my daddy that I couldn't get from my mother.
Yeah.
And there were things I got from my mother I couldn't get from my daddy.
Same for me. You know, I grew up in a two-parent household, had a mother and a father. And there were things and times where I went to my dad where I didn't go to my mom. And then there's times I went to my mom versus my dad. They both contributed two separate things. And I think we discount the role of fathers for girls. But it's really important because it sets up not only your attitude of self-worth and what you can do, because fathers are a big contributor of pushing their daughters to, right. Hey, you can do this, you can do that. And don't let a man treat you like right. this over here. He sets an example for how the men in her life should treat her.
Right. Believe me, kids watch their parents.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they're not saying it or making it overt, they watch their parents. And a girl gets her sense of self-worth mm-hmm. from her father, not yeah. from her mother. And she gets her version of what a man's supposed to be by watching her father. If she sees her father beat her mother,
and
her mother takes it.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
If she
that
gets older.
That sets it up for a normal relationship right. pattern later on. And, you know, I know you don't pay attention to pop culture, but there's actually a song that came out not too long ago. And it's a really neat song. And it says, I want a man who loves me like my father loves my mother.
Right.
The woman sings about the things right. that she sees her parents doing and that she wants somebody who does that for right. her. In the statistics about fatherlessness, one thing I found was that there's a study that found that women who grew up who didn't have fathers in the household were more likely to have children with absent fathers themselves.
Well, sure. Yeah. It just continues.
Yep.
The ray of hope is that you're starting to see now some of these women coming forward and saying, hey, we've been lied to. This is crapola.
Not just crap, but crapola, right?
Crapola. Leftists are the national distributors of crapola. Uh-huh. And we're not buying it anymore.
Yeah.
We don't see men as inherently evil and oppressors of women.
No.
That's a construct of these groups that have to separate women from the rest of society.
Men and women have equal potential for being bad.
Right. So we can't just throw that over totally on men. Yeah, there's a lot of bad guys out there.
Yeah.
And I think there's more of them today than there were 40 years ago because of this very subject that we're talking about today. We've given men permission
to be bad,
to withdraw from these women.
Yeah.
We've given them permission to do it. Anyway, you got anything else?
I'm just going to reiterate here that I will put links to the statistics and stuff that I've found in the description. We'll also put the link to that episode about feminism and abortion. And if you have any topic that you would like covered, or if you want more information on this, like I say, go to lifedynamics.com/podcast. And on that forum, tell us what you want to hear. Let us know what kind of shows you want to hear.
Comment on the shows we've already done. Mm-hmm. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Tell us what we're doing right.
Be like, this episode was the worst you've ever done. Please don't do this over here, but do more of X over here.
I tell you what, tell me what I'm doing right and tell Sarah what she's doing wrong. That's a balance right there. That's a male-female kind of.
Sure. I can take it. I'm strong enough. I had a good daddy, so.
Anyway, I'm out of time here. We're out of time. We're
both out of time.
Yep. Until next time, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Mm-mm, we're here to win.
Because winning is how the killing stops. We will see you next Thursday.
Bye, guys.